American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they call the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Tuesday, May 10th, 2005. Tuesday, day after Monday. You're two days into it, therefore, Tuesday. This is Newsreel, your daily report as the woke counterculture defeats the evil of core political tyranny. And we will win! And you can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. You can get to my live journal by going to Sean underscore Kennedy, S-E-A-N underscore Kennedy.livejournal.com. Once you're there, you'll be able to read all of my very deep and intrinsic visions of myself, my future, my friends, my family, my beautiful and talented wife, and lovely co-host Samarian, who isn't with me today, unfortunately, which is too bad, you know, because I think the shows are better with Sim here. You know, realistically, I love having Sim here. It's great to get his take on stuff, so it's not all just, you know, my view on things, because Sim and I see things pretty differently in a lot of ways, but we both are able to get past our personal differences and understand the terms of acceptance, something that the people in the Middle East can get along with, because believe you me, if a guy like me and a rabid vegan like Sim can work together on a radio station, the Middle East is chicken feed. This is a free radio broadcast like we heard on Rant Radio, 76 Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Radio306.com, and OspeyRadio.info. And you are free to distribute this broadcast any way you see fit. You can do whatever you like with it. You can, you know, copy it to disk. You can put it on your iPod. You can put it on a podcast. You can put it on an FM transmitter. Hell, you could get yourself a cell phone jammer and broadcast this over people's cell phones, which I think would be kind of hot. But, you know, just don't get caught, because after all, you're going to do jail time for that kind of stuff now. The days of phone freaking are basically over. And speaking of which, that guy Kevin, you know, Kevin Mitnick, the Free Kevin guy, I guess he's come out with a new book, and I can't remember the name of it, which is okay, because I'm not going to push it anyway. But anyway, he's come out with a new book, and it's all about, you know, your network is unsafe. It's basically this FUD book. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Kevin Mitnick a phone freaker? Isn't that his, like, lot in life? Wasn't the guy actually a hardcore phone freaker? And since he was a phone freaker and it's been illegal for him to basically touch a computer, how is the guy even going to remotely stay current with computer tech trends and technology? Now, not to rip on the dude, because if he can make money by selling books to the core political, I'm all like, go ahead, Kevin, make it happen, buddy. But unless, you know, that's really the case, I'm kind of like, well, you know, I don't know how good that book's going to be. So I'm not actually going to push his book, because I don't like pushing products just because, you know, he wrote it and whatever, you know. If I don't think it's a good product, I don't want to push the thing. You know, I'm just kind of funny like that. Also, I was listening to the Newsreel show the other day, and I seemed to notice that my mic was not loud enough. Yes, it's one of those little things that I pick up on every now and again. Maybe it just could be because Samarian's mic was louder than mine. You know, maybe I'm having some Darcy feedback here from back in Drex all day, but you know, I just didn't think I was really loud enough, so I hope I'm loud enough for you guys, and if not, I'll probably fix it up in post-production. But let's get back to the show, shall we? Let's get straight into some feedback. Dear Sean, one of the big problems with the XM20M firearm, this is the new gun that comes out, which is all plastic and, you know, really high speed, low drag. You've seen it on Popular Mechanics. It looks like, it looks like a Starship Troopers rifle. But one of the big problems with the XM29 firearm is that the direct fire portion of the thing only has a 10-inch barrel on it. Wow. The 5.56 NATO round it fires won't build up the whole lot of velocity before that short barrel. The M4s have the same problem since they're like an 11-inch barrel. Yeah, that's a problem, actually. Because, as most people know, gunpowder, or most people may or may not know, gunpowder does not explode. Gunpowder burns quickly. And what happens then is that the gases build up very quickly behind it, and it actually blows the bullet out of the rifle. So the longer the tube, the more gases you've got time to build up in there, and therefore the faster the projectile goes. Now, this is not as true with revolvers, because revolvers are open. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have, that's why you get those big candles coming out the side and the back and all the rest of it. Because all that, although it looks cool at night, the whole concept is that you got to get the gases behind the bullet in order to throw it out at a higher muzzle velocity. And that's the whole idea. So that was from Fat Ninja. Fat Ninja. He wrote that in, and I never really thought of that, so he's probably got a very good point. Sometimes everybody gets a little bit too wrapped up in the new and sexy tech for their own good. Dear Sean, I just thought of something while listening to episode 65 of Newsreel. That just scares me a lot. You mentioned the RIAA again and how they are so heavily against file sharing, and I think I have an idea why they really hate it. It's simple. They have no control over the dissemination of the media. The RIAA and record companies want to be able to control what we listen to. Absolutely. The file sharing programs, however, are bypassing the stranglehold on music, spreading the music around the world. For if they were able to stop people from using it, they will force people to find out what bands are hot through the radio or TV instead of making up their own mind. It will also force bands to go to record companies and pay them all the money so their music can become popular. They are spreading propaganda and fear to try to bring their control back to it once great power, but the RIAA and its huge record companies are dying. Rock out. Pertu wrote me that. Very cool, Pertu, and I think you are absolutely correct. Now, you know, the difference between me and a lot of other people is that I actually appreciate it when people send in a little bit of criticism every now and again. And, you know, I want to give it a chance for other people to hear other people's criticism and rebuttal. So I'm just going to read this letter, how I got it here, and I'm going to read it in the spirit I think it was written. Dear Sean, after listening to today's Thursday, May 5th, 2005 show, I feel I need to address some recently stirred emotions. I've been a rant listener for close to a year now and haven't followed your work and work of participants closely, albeit from under the radar of those involved. Newsreel has been extremely informative and without a doubt will continue to be. It struck me today while listening to Newsreel that your reactions to topics you're reporting on, rather than the topics themselves, have become exclusively rhetorical. At times, you even cross into the stereotypical Christian-esque fear-inducing rhetoric. I personally feel that your excessive use of the word evil in reference to government figureheads, activities, etc., has the potential to mark you as hypocritical when you have been known to report on the use of fear, psycholinguistics, subconscious programming, etc., by those in power. You may retort with something it may be excessive, but it's certainly true kind. This is great because, and I'll finish this off, kind, to which I could ask you to prove that it's in fact evil, rather than a group of people doing what they feel is right. Evil is subjective. Look at religion. Okay, remember that line. Maybe you're fighting back with the same tools used by the opposition. Powerful, yes. But you get called on it eventually, and to paraphrase the general idea set forth by your previous work, people with monetary power have more control than those backing of large groups. Right. There are presumably many angles to this. In my current state of somnambulistic unrest, I'm unable to bring forth mentally, so I will leave a true explanation to you. I want you to remember that no matter what you say, I respect your opinion as being exactly that, your opinion. This is merely feedback from the perspective of someone who is working exclusively underground, socio-informational black ops, if you will. Many thanks, Sean. I look forward to working with you in the future. Sincerely, Kipling. Okay, well, what we got here is it talks about evil is subjective. Look at religion. Now, this is a dangerous statement, and I'm just going to talk about that right there. I do not believe that evil is subjective. I do believe that evil is a real thing. Don't ever think for a minute that I don't think that evil is an actual tangible thing. Okay. And this is going to be one that I'm probably going to lose a couple people on. You know, and the only people who know what I'm talking about here are, and this is going to sound really kind of weird, but there are people out there who've come across evil stuff that truly is evil. Evil is not subjective. There is crap out there that I feel is evil. And when you see it, when you really see it, I don't mean through a screen. I mean when you see it face to face, when you get right up in that sucker, you can taste it. It's like this weird bile in the back of your mouth. Now, I understand that you may think this is all just, you know, some biological reaction or something. But no, guys, there really is evil in the world. And the way my moral compass works, okay, the way I've determined, because they're like, well, how do you, it's all based on religion. No. No, my moral compass is swayed, I've said this before, I'll say it again, on suffering. If something increases suffering, it's bad. If it decreases suffering, it's good. You see how that works? Anything that decreases suffering, maybe not even death toll, because sometimes, you know, if you've got a lot of really sick animals that are suffering, you put them down. That kills them, but it decreases suffering. And there'll be the extremists who say, well, why don't I just nuke the world? No more suffering. Well, on one handle, yeah, I suppose that's kind of true, but, you know, we also kill everything and kind of destroy the most precious thing in the universe. And what is the most precious thing in the universe? Life. Because we're having a hell of a hard time finding it anywhere else in the known void. So thank you for the feedback. Anybody else wants to post feedback to that, you can. I'm not trying to start a flame war. We're looking for intelligent conversation here on the show. Speaking of the show, let's get into the news. In biomod news, very, very cool, House lawmakers overwhelmingly approved a final version of stem cell research bill on Wednesday, despite a promised veto by Governor Mitt Romney. Oh, no, we get to go ahead with technology. The bill, designed to encourage embryonic stem cell research in Massachusetts, was approved 119-38. Well, that was close. The Senate approved it by 34-2 last week. Both votes give supporters far more than two-thirds majority needed to override the government veto, or the gubernatorial veto. A final procedural vote is needed in both chambers before the bill is sent to Romney's desk. The legislation represents a compromise between two versions last month in the House and Senate. It would allow scientists to create cloned embryos and extract their stem cells for research. I'm all for it. I am all for it. As a matter of fact, I'm even all for that research where they take a clone fetal tissue and they insert the fetal tissue into the spine of your back, because they've done it in France. They take fetal tissue, stuff it into your back, and that fetal tissue will grow, because fetal tissue can grow into anything, and there have been people in France able to reconnect people's broken backs. But we don't hear about that over here. All our paraplegic people over here, they don't hear about that. Christopher Reeve, Superman, he probably would still be alive if he went to France and used the technology that all the mud hut religions over here don't want us to use, since I'm pissing everybody off. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to call that evil. I would just call that ignorance. And the guy who said ignorance is bliss ought to be boiled in his own ignorance, as far as I'm concerned. That's just stupid. That's just stupid. If we can get this science and this kind of wetware is going to save lives and to get people back moving, running, jumping and stuff, getting some kids who've had bad accidents, get them walking again so that we can improve the quality of life of our fellow man, I say do it. Do it, and consequences be damned. You know what? I don't care. I don't really care that we're doing stem cell research. It's not like we're grabbing already existing kids and like holding them down because they didn't fit in with society and experimenting on them. That'll be in a couple of years. But right now, the stem cell research, I say bonus, because that's one more little knife wound in the side of the religious right. Speaking of which, let's get into the pharma fascism news. You like that phrase? I didn't make that up. But it's pretty true. That's what it is. We're getting into pharma fascism. The Murdoch Children's Research Institute is trialing a Java-based mobile application that helps with early warning signs detection and moderation and monitoring of adolescent depression. So what we're talking about here is we're talking about a cell phone that monitors you for depression. And this is on top of the cell phones cranking out the radiation that causes depression. The product, developed by Object Consulting, is believed to be the first mobile phone application used in healthcare field research in Australia. A focus group of 40 adolescents supplied with Nokia 6260 smartphones preloaded with the application is presently testing its effectiveness. A larger study involving 400 young people is scheduled for next year. Okay, Desert Runner, in Australia, you want to find out what's going on with this and make sure you alert as many people as you can. You don't want to take part in this program. According to Dr. Sophie Reed, child and adolescent research psychologist at the Institute, depression and anxiety affects up to 30% of adolescents as likely to become the number one disease in Australia by 2020. Well, I got news for you. Anxiety is all part of growing up because your hormones when you're a teenager are way out of whack. Everybody goes through angst. It's part of the package. And if you try to medicate that, you're going to mess up kids, make a bunch of money for core political, pharma fascist giants. And, you look at your phone and say, it's time to take your pill. You're not feeling good today. I mean, I refer you once again to THX 1138. A critical factor in the difference between healthy adjustment and subsequent depression is how young people respond to distress. The application that Object has developed will play a crucial role in facilitating research, collection, analysis of data, and develop early warning software. Tell me if this alarms you. The application, which gathers information on how adolescents experience and respond to distress, is expected to provide more comprehensive and accurate data than traditional research tools such as written questionnaires. Well, it's not going to be much more accurate. It initially comprises a set of questionnaires that pop up on the phone at random intervals 3 or 4 times during the day. The respondent then enters a PIN or ID code and answers a list of questions on the phone through test function. You get the wrong answers, you have to medicate. Questions being asked by the program range from the respondents' location and activity to their immediate company and events of the day. It also includes open-ended questions such as, did something stressful happen today? How did you cope with it? Well, I mean, Jesus, how can you interpret that? The application uses a text function to store the answers within the phone until the end of the week when the questionnaires are distributed. After this, the phone is taken to an institute for the answers to download it via Bluetooth or infrared. Not to mention the fact that I suppose, you know, a clever con artist could come by, hack the phone, get all your data, and then be able to construct a con based upon your answers to see, you know, what's going on. Like, you could totally pull a Morpheus thing here. I know who you are. Especially if this person really is mentally unbalanced, it doesn't take much of a nudge to throw them over the edge and teach them anything you want. This is what Scientology does. And believe me, if you can believe Scientology, baby, you can believe anything. Okay, also in pharma fascism news. You like that? I'm starting to cluster this stuff together. The man can learn. Radar finds drug reactions. A study finds 15 medical treatments are linked to serious reactions, including 170 deaths. Oh, really? Researchers in Chicago reported Wednesday that have found large numbers of previously unknown and often fatal reactions to 14 commonly prescribed drugs and to drug-coated cardiac stents, whatever that is. The report in the Journal of American Medical Association is one of the results of an independent pharmaceutical surveillance program known as RADAR. Aha! Research and Adverse Drug Effects and Reports Project, which looks at the safety of drugs already on the market, which obviously are not so safe because they found 14 commonly prescribed drugs with fatal reactions. Scientists from the Northeastern University scoured academic journals, reports, and pharmaceutical companies and U.S. and Food Drug Administration database for information about adverse reactions to common drugs. They identified reactions that affected nearly 1,700 patients. Holy crow, that's not 170, that's 1,700, and divided into the groups of effects: death, severe organ failure, and case requiring major interventions like CPR or liver transplant. Oh, I see, so there's 170 deaths. But times that for a factor of 10 for all the really nasty adverse reactions that nobody really knows about. This is why we have drugs that hit the market, kill a bunch of people, and then nobody seems to be suing these companies over things like Vioxx and that. Maybe they will, but again, you know, it's what this is. This is a money war. Don't you forget it. This is all about the cash. In peer-to-peer news, another brick is going into the wall to block Canada's Liberal government from rewriting the country's Copyright Act. Now, this is important for the United States of Canada, and we're going to stand back away from the rest of Jesus land, thanks to my shirt that I got sent. And it's being sent by Liberal backbencher David McGuinty. Now, I've heard of this guy. On Friday, he'll table a further 583 petitions demanding that attempts by ministers Liza Frula, Heritage, and David Emerson, Industry, have Canada's intellectual property laws amended to suit the entertainment industry be held off. Absolutely. Last month, opposition MP Peter Gillian presented the petition for users' rights to Parliament. Petitioners want this House to maintain the balance between the rights of the public and the rights of the creators, he said. They demanded that the government not extend the term of copyright, preserving all existing users' rights to ensure a vibrant public domain. The petitioners also call upon Parliament to ensure that users are recognized as interested parties and are meaningfully consulted about any proposed changes to the Copyright Act. This is a huge bill. Huge. You know, and I really do believe that as things get more and more locked down in the United States, there's going to be more and more Americans coming up into Canada. And maybe this isn't such a bad thing. You know, realistically, although America is getting more and more, you know, crazy by the day, if I can get enough Americans to come up into Canada, when you come up here, bring your U.S. Constitution, and then eventually we'll develop, you know, a North American party, we'll use the U.S. Constitution as our mandate, and, you know, that gives us a chance to remuster, we'll take over all of Canada and move back down into the United States until eventually all North America, we get Manifest Destiny. I'm okay with Manifest Destiny, by the way. I'm not all wrapped up on where the borders are in the country. I like some of the Canadian laws. I like some of the American laws. If we could just kind of mix the two of them together and make one giant strong nation that's free, actually free, and by the original U.S. Constitution version of free, not the new George Orwellian conversion of free where me with my blinders on and my shackles and my IV drip tells me that I'm actually happy, happy, happy. No, that's not what I want. What I want is to be actually free in the American Easy Rider kind of sense of being free. That's me, you know. That's kind of my own personal viewpoint. So, you know, don't get wound up too much in things like nationalism and patriotism. Because realistically, I don't care if you're South American, I don't care if you're American, I don't care if you're Canadian. Everyone has the right to life, and everyone has the right to information and education. And the sooner we can get rid of the borders and the symbols, the quicker we'll get rid of the symbol-minded. Also in P2P news, Napster creator Sean Fanning has made a deal with music giant EMI for use of his Snowcap music tracking system. Oh, so the guys from Napster really, really went evil. Snowcap allows internet users to trade music legitimately over peer-to-peer networks, as every song is given a unique fingerprint. Early file-sharing system Napster was shut down in 2001 after U.S. judges said it was breaking copyright law, but has relaunched as a legal service. Snowcap has already signed deals with Sony, BMG, and Universal. And who actually uses Snowcap? Nobody! Terms of Snowcap EMI's deal were not disclosed when the agreement was announced on Thursday. This sends a signal to the music industry critics who claim that we are technophobic, EMI Music North America chairman and chief executive David Munn said. If anything, we're embracing technologies like Snowcap. Like Snowcap, anything else we don't like. But if it plays along to our tune, we like it, which allows peer-to-peer communities to share music legally. Yes. Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I really do believe that intellectual property laws are stupid. You know, they really are. I mean, it's an idea. Even still, I mean, you know, well, Sean, you are a writer. Okay, you've got, you know, Tales from the Afternow. People ask you all the time, do you want to make Afternow? Do you want to? The reason why I stop people from doing Afternow short stories and shows and continuing on and stuff is I don't want to, and this is the truth now, is I don't want people to write a story that uses the characters I have and kill one of my characters off. And then I've got to blade the guy who wrote the story by writing my own story, because it's kind of like I'm writing the world. When I'm done writing the world, like when I die, all my stuff is going full on open source. Like, I want people to write stories in the Afternow. I mean, how much more high praise can you reach than that? Personally, if I was a musician, yeah, I wouldn't want to starve. But if you can make people's lives all over the world better because you're sharing music, I mean, realistically, if there's something that has in the contest for being divine that we have in the modern world, I put it to you that music is probably pretty high up there on that list. Music is very, very cool, and I enjoy it. And I hope that, you know, eventually we can get past this whole concept where artists are, you know, feel that they're being persecuted. And I think that actually, and once we get past this, if we can get all the artists to get online and let fans direct connectly with the artists and therefore get rid of the recording industry, because you know what? They're not needed. You're a dinosaur. Time to die. You know, if we can get past them and distribute everything through the web, well, I guess we're doing good. In censorship news, a bill that sought to ban the sale of especially violent video games to children under the age of 17 years failed to clear committee Tuesday, the second year an attempt to restrict youth access to popular pastime is defeated by the legislator. Hoorah! The bill, AB 450, by Assemblyman Leland Yee of San Francisco, would have assessed a $1,000 fine each time a merchant was found to have sold or rented a video game depicting savage violence against humans to a child 16 years or younger. Savage violence against humans. What about just savage violence? Only against humans. You can rip up all the aliens and you know, ducks and everything else you want, but just humans. It also would have required a label touting the ban to be affixed to the game, so a tipper sticker for the games. An Assembly Committee on Arts, Entertainment, Sports, Tourism, and Internet Media voted 5-4 in favor of the bill, with an abstention by Assemblyman Jerome Horton of Los Angeles County, but 6 votes are needed. Passage remains possible this week if Horton can be persuaded to vote in favor of the bill. Ah, so maybe he'll hold out for some political clout, see what he can get for his party, and then he'll vote for it. Shockingly, Vivid video games such as Grand Theft Auto have provoked a debate in recent years for portraying everything from extreme violence against women to the killing of police officers. Big deal, it's a video game. We should not allow kids on their own to go into store and purchase those kinds of ultra-violent video games, Yee told members. Well, you know, you should look at what the kids are doing in comic books, too. I hate to tell you this. But, you know, why don't you just, you know, and why stop there? Let's get rid of all the Tarzan books, and why not Armor and all these science fiction books with this bloodshed, and no more Warhammer 40K. No more Warhammer 40K. You know, no more tabletop wargaming either. As a matter of fact, chess. Chess is pretty vicious. You got generals, tactics there. I don't know. Chess is kind of savage. The bill had a broad support from medical and youth advocacy groups, including the California Academy of Pediatricians and the Girl Scouts. You know, that's begging for me to do something with that, but I'm not going to play that card. Opponents included the American Civil Liberties Union and the Motion Picture Association. Now, when you get the American Civil Liberties Union and the MPAA on the same team for anything, I'm here to tell you, that's a rare kettle of fish right there. Where Civil Liberties and the MPAA said, no, we want to be able to sell our stuff. You know, that's kind of a rare day when you get stuff like that happening on. Now, in booster news, now boostering is the concept of speeding one up, hence boosted. Boosted reflexes, boosted cognizance, boosted mind, boosted body. This is where the term booster comes from, and we have, of course, all the booster gangs, which are young wogs, young and old. Actually, I shouldn't even say young wogs. I should say wogs banding together in large groups to see how they can make themselves faster, hang out with like-minded individuals. This is not to say that everybody gets around and shoots up. This is to say that everybody gets around and speeds up their synaptic processes through conversation, through hanging out, and through being with like-minded individuals so that they can, in fact, have some sense of family in an era when the family has been dissolved by a core political work schedule. How's that for rhetoric? You like that? It also happens to be, well, true. In booster news, a new class of drug may increase alertness without any of the jitterness of overstimulation. That's the results of a small clinical trial released this week. Ooh, this might actually wind up in pharmafascism news, but, you know, it's still a booster. A compound dubbed CX-717. That doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it? We don't have to call them red bennies or something. A member of a new class called ampakines. Never hear of an ampakine? It's an amps. Get some amps in there. Significantly improved performance on tests of memory, attention, alertness, reaction time, and problem solving in healthy men deprived of sleep. Wow. The study was carried out by Julia Boyle at the Sleep Research Centre of University of Surrey in the UK and her colleagues on behalf of Cortex Pharmaceuticals Incorporated. Aha! So it looks like Cortex Pharmaceuticals sponsored this. Danger, danger, danger. During the trial, 16 healthy young males were randomly assigned to take either 100 milligrams, 300 milligrams, or 1,000 milligrams of the drug. Wow, those are heavy dosages. Or given a placebo. By the end of the experiment, each volunteer had been assigned to all of the experiment groups, thus presenting his own control scores. The volunteers were hooked up to EEGs to measure brainwave activity and were put through a battery of tests. The first round of each session was after a good night's sleep. Thereafter, they were tested every few hours throughout the sleepless night into the next morning for the total of 27 hours without rest. The researchers found that the drug significantly improved performance on tests, and taking the more of the drug improved performance for longer. Danger may be habit forming. Also, you got to bear in mind too, I mean, like, okay, well, what's the side effects here? And how does that stack? You know, like, are you going to put that in with, some of the other drugs that are on the market, like ginkgo and stuff like that? You got to be careful with drugs, you know? It's one of those kind of things where I'm a big fan of natural occurring drugs myself, like cola nut and stuff like that. And that's not to say, I mean, you can go out and find yourself a mushroom or some foxglove and eat that, and that's natural, and you'll be just as dead as a doorknob, you know what I mean? So you got to watch that. You got to watch that, but it is something that is out there and we got to be careful with is the drug situation. Mind you, it is a tool that can be used, but must be used with discretion. And if you're in school, you should stay off drugs because, well, you need your brain. Not to say that you don't need your brain when you're older, but if you screw with your brain while you're in school, you haven't got a large margin for error, especially in today's modern school system. So don't do any drugs, including weed, until you're out of school, and that means university. Are we clear here? That's my stand. Now, on to eugenics. To the dismay, and this is in eugenics news. Eugenics, for those of you who don't keep track, is the, that's that whole genetic, you know, ethnic background, you know, sort of a racial profiling kind of thing. And I didn't want to call this racism news because it has to do with racism, but it has to do with genetics and eugenics because, to the dismay of gay rights activists, the Food and Drug Administration is about to implement new rules recommending that any man who is engaged in homosexual sex in the previous 5 years be barred from serving as an anonymous sperm donor. The FDA has rejected calls to scrap the provision, insisting that gay men collectively pose a higher than average risk of carrying the AIDS virus. Critics accuse the FDA of stigmatizing all gay men rather than adopting a screening process that focuses on high-risk sexual behavior by any would-be donor, gay or straight. So you mean to tell me that the sperm banks aren't screening the donors? Because in that case, I wouldn't even bother doing that. I mean, holy cow, you mean to tell me that their method of screening against AIDS is just to kick out the gay people? No more. Oh, we'll get rid of the, because after all, AIDS is the gay disease, right? That's how it works. There's no straight people with AIDS, right? You need to give your head a shake. Under these rules, a heterosexual man who had unprotected sex with an HIV-positive prostitute would be okay as a donor 1 year later. But a gay man in a monogamous same-sex relationship is not okay unless he's been celibate for 5 years, says Leland Trainman, director of the Clinical of Almedia, California, that seeks gay sperm donors. Aha. Now, on one hand, there's the notion that being gay is genetic. You know, there's people who believe that being gay is a genetic choice. It's not like an emotional choice. It's not like you can get up in the morning and decide that you're going to be gay. I'm sure that you could get up in the morning and decide that you're going to, you know, be with other men or people of the same gender. But I am sort of the opinion myself, personally now, that I think it's largely a biological thing. I think some people, I didn't choose to have glasses. I don't think people choose to be gay. You know, that might make me a bigot, but I don't know. I don't think that they really got a lot of choice in the matter. So I don't really see any reason to get all hateful about it. Now, on the they're saying that this is a method for screening, you know, the AIDS patients is what they're saying. You know, which I thought was kind of weird. Because I imagine that if you'd want to know if your sperm donor was gay or straight, because if it was genetic, it'd be like if your sperm donor for whatever child you want to have, you know, if they had a predisposition for some other genetic qualities, you'd probably want that. But then this gets into my world where I believe in knowing the genetics of your child. I'm all for enhancing genetic babies, like custom babies and stuff like that, where you can, you know, give the kid, like, enhance what they got, you know, take away the bad stuff, give them the good stuff. And if that means that you want your kid to have blue eyes, then, you know, why not? It's not going to hurt the kid. Why not give him blue eyes? Why not give him a higher IQ? Why not make it so that he doesn't have to wear glasses? Why not give that kid every edge you possibly can? And people then, of course, say, well, you know, without a doubt, Sean, what you're going to do then is you're going to make these, you know, these genetically engineered children better than the god babies that are naturally born. Well, so be it. This is yet another example of technology, you know, being a little bit better than nature. Maybe that's what the process of evolution is going to turn into. And I'm sure I'm going to get some hate mail on this one. But personally, I think that there's nothing wrong with designer babies, really. I mean, it's a very hot topic. And I don't think that, you know, people should be experimenting on children. I mean, if there's something that you know that you take away this or that and the kid's not going to wear glasses, I'm okay with that. If your kid has a propensity to be born with, though, I don't know, like Parkinson's, say it's in your a disease in your family or whatever, or, you know, some other nasty disease, Lou Gehrig's disease or cerebral palsy or something like that, or it's genetically in your history, and the doctor says, you know what, I can take this out, or your kid has a chance, you know, of being all palsied out. I'm sure that if you were to ask Smokehouse, if he had a chance, you know, at birth to go, right, Smokey, we're going to remove this little chromosome, and you don't have to worry about, you know, being crippled anymore, I'm sure he'd be like, fuck yeah, sign me up for that, you know? But no. That's when you get, you know, all the Mud Hut religions in there going, no. Every child is sacred. Gotta watch that. It's a slippery slope. Once you start modifying, you know, children's genetic codes to make them, you know, not be diseased anymore, eventually they'll be making Uber children. Well, maybe. Maybe, but if all the kids were born as Uber children, what's the problem? You know, okay, fine, there probably would be some problems with it. But what I'm trying to get across here is I don't think that designer kids are really all that bad. Given the druthers, I'd rather be born a designer child myself, and if myself and the Dark One were to have a kid, I would want to have designer effects on that kid too. Pump all the Baroque music into his little womb there. You know, make sure she's loading up on the bee pollen. Royal jelly, you betcha. Mind you, luckily for me, or unluckily for me, probably luckily for the kid, however, if me and the Dark One were ever to produce some offspring, if we ever decided to spawn, you know, chances are she's not going to let me do any experiments with the kid, which is kind of a bummer, but there it is. In drug war news, new reports by the Sentencing Project documents law enforcement targeting low-level marijuana offenders. Listen to this. The Sentencing Project, now this is a great group here. The Sentencing Project announces the release of a new report, The War on Marijuana, Transformation of the War on Drugs, in the 1990s, which documents the treatment of marijuana use in the criminal justice system. Now, bear in mind, this is pot. And even if you hate drugs, even if you don't agree with legalizing weed and all the rest of it, you've got to admit that weed, in the grand scheme of things, is not the great menace of drugs. It doesn't even kill people, okay? during the 1990s, the war on drugs was transformed into the war on marijuana, with law enforcement officials shifting their focus to arresting increasing numbers of low-level marijuana offenders. For the period studied, 1990 to 2002, that's a 12-year study, 82% of the national increase in drug arrests were for marijuana offenses. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't really think that marijuana is a huge threat on the street right now. I would call that maybe some crack. Maybe some meth is pretty bad. You know, after 10 doses of meth, your brain is actually starting to burn. You know, I mean, hello. And nearly all of this growth was for possession. You know what I heard about crystal meth the other day? This is some sick shit here. Now, I know a crystal meth junkie. Not a friend of mine, but I know one. And whenever they do meth, you see what happens is they get these boils on their face because the toxins that are in the meth go into their skin and they actually go into their face. And if they smoke a lot of it, the pus on their boils will actually crystallize because the body, it finds the weakest part of your body and it ejects these boils. And the boils, when they break open, if the air gets to them, will crystallize. And you can actually break off the boil and smoke that and get high from it, from the crystals, from the boil on your skin. Now, that is the most twisted, after-now-esque, sick fucking drug I've ever heard of in my life. Holy cow. I mean, I'm all for recycling. But, I mean, that mental picture alone is enough to make me stay away from crystal meth for the rest of my life. I'm smoking chunks and I'm breaking off of my own scabs? I don't think so. You can count somebody else for that. All you meth heads out there, time to quit. This resulted in getting back to the dope thing. This resulted in a significant expenditure of policing resources dedicated to low-level offenses, with only 1 in 18 arrests resulting in a felony conviction. Despite an estimated, you ready for this, $4 billion in criminal justice costs being spent annually on marijuana, use and availability of the drug have not declined, while the cost is dropping. Why don't you put that $4 billion in trying to stop the space cases and give it to NASA and actually make a real space case? You know what I mean? I'm sure NASA could use an extra $4 billion to get us off the planet. Jesus. The results of the report raise an important policy questions about the resource allocations needed to be reconsidered when analyzing the drug control approach. Because realistically, the war on drugs is stupid. It is absolutely retarded. Now, if you want to declare war on drugs and go after, you know, cocaine or crystal meth or some of these designer drugs that are out there that are killing the kids, that's fine. That's fine. Do that. But the thing is that a lot of these, like pot, does not kill anybody. Show me somebody who died from pot, okay? And I mean straight up pot, not laced pot. You know, I don't know of any off the top, and I've looked. I'm sure there's probably one or two that have been overlooked. I'm sure there's one or two people who had a heart condition, or maybe they had some sort of genetic defect or whatever, and they smoked some weed, everything went wrong, or they crashed the car and they died. I'm not talking like that. I'm talking straight, you know, smoke up dead. Doesn't happen. You have to smoke something like 5 hay bales to OD on the stuff, and even then, I think you just go to sleep. Being in the security world, and I'm sure cops will back me on this, anyone in the security field, I know there's a Texas Ranger who listens. I'd love to get his feedback on this. But the truth is, I would sooner break up a gang of 12 guys smoking weed than 12 guys drinking. Because the guys drinking think they're 10 feet tall and bulletproof, and they want to scrap with you. But the guys smoking weed, oh, hell, they're just as friendly as punch. They'll leave for a bag of Cheetos. No problem. Hey, guys. Hey, man. How's it going? I've walked into a parking lot where doing security work, and there's like 10 people, no lie, sitting around in the parking lot around a hookah that the guys made out of plumbing equipment, which, incidentally, I thought was rather ingenious and pretty cool. But anyway, it was this huge neon plastic PVC tube hookah that this guy made, you know, because it came up to about the average height of a door handle, if you can imagine. That's how big this thing was in the middle of a public parking lot. And I walk up to this group of guys, and I'm like, hey, guys, and they're like, oh, shit, security guy. You know, they're all staring at me, and I'm like, can I get a hit? And they're like, oh, sure. And I'm like, no! What are you doing? You got a hookah set up in a public parking lot, you freak. They all had a good laugh, and everybody put it in their trunk, and everybody was cool. Went and saw the movies and bought lots of popcorn, which you shouldn't buy, incidentally, because, you know, it's really fattening. But anyway, honest to God, you know, but if you got people who are drinking, you know, they got 4 cases of beer out there, I would add beer bottles that hucked at me. I'm all for the weed. Don't get me wrong. I'd sooner see booze banned, but, again, you know, people do have the right to choice. All about the choice over here. And I've been known to partake in an occasional beer myself. But, you know, there's a difference. When you look at the damage that alcohol has done to our society, and any paramedic and cop will also tell you, if it wasn't for booze, they'd be largely unemployed. All right? Update. Speaking of drinking, drink or die. Remember those guys used to crack programs for Commodore 64 and stuff like that? Well, I reported on them getting arrested. Now we got an update. Drink or die, jail time. Three men who pirated computer software have received jail terms between 18 months and 2.5 years. They were part of a network of pirates known as Drink or Die. They were actually crackers. Who cracked software protection codes, enabling it to be copied and downloaded. Old Bailey heard how the men who were arrested along with 60 others did not make money from their activities, but opposed as Robin Hoods, which, in fact, they were heroes. The judge, and they still are, by the way, the judge told them their scam struck at the heart of the software industry. Yeah, because you know the software industry is really hurting right now. Alex Bell, 32, former city banker of Grays, Essex, and Stephen Dowd, 42, of Newton Lee Windows, Merseyside, has denied charges to conspiracy to defraud. What's their motive, guys? What's the intention here? They didn't make any money. They were convicted on March after a 5-month trial. Bell was jailed for 2.5 years for giving out information. Dowd for 2 years. Accomplices, Andrew Early, 35, of Deal Kent, an IT manager, Mark Vent, 31, of Grays Essex, pleaded guilty to conspiracy to defraud last year and were sentenced alongside their co-conspirators. Vent was jailed only for 18 months, but Erdley, a former Staffordshire School IT worker, escaped jail, receiving an 18-month sentence suspended for 2 years. Judge Paul Falk told the defendants it was impossible to quantify the losses caused by their scam. Yeah, it's impossible to quantify the losses caused by their scam. Conversely, it is also impossible to quantify how many people these people provided the gateway for to get into the IT industry. How many people out there got into computers because of video games? Be honest. How many people out there, the first thing you did was play a video game? Now, when you're 14 years old and your parents are low income, and you want to get yourself a computer, and if their parents manage to, you know, work slave, whatever, to buy the hardware to get you that software, you're on your own. And guys like Drink or Die were distributing games that got your brain working, made you understand how games worked, came up with the original concept. These games, the industry would have been progressing a lot slower if it wasn't for the heroes like Drink or Die. And it's a sad, sad day when Drink or Die turns into the martyrs in England. I mean, it's not really that surprising. They're in a Gattaca nation anyway. These are the same people who want to set up microphones on all the telephone poles to help monitor noise complaints. You know, it's really sad that Drink or Die is down. And maybe it'd be interesting if anyone in the UK could find out, you know, maybe the mailing address of the guys in jail, and we could write letters to the guys at Drink or Die. And you, yourself, if anyone out there was helped or used or got hours of entertainment by stuff cracked by Drink or Die, don't you think, as they're in jail trying to keep their sanity, it might be worthwhile to write letters to these guys? I know I've got some UK listeners. I know we got some listeners in the UK. So please, could somebody please find out the address of how to get mail to the guys while they're on the inside of Drink or Die? Because the WOGs need to support these people. We can't just forget about them. So please, 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 unless you get this in a later broadcast, if you've downloaded this later and you hear this now and you're in England, can you find out what their address is? Because I would love to read that on the air. Maybe I could get a phone report with these guys, put it on the show. I feel so bad for Drink or Die because now they're caught in the belly of the beast. It's sad, but there it is. Now I got some nanotech news for you. And nanotech, of course, is always hot now. You know, as people will point out, nano is the new buzzword phrase. Everything, instead of being E this and E that, it's nano this and nano that. But this would seem to be, I was kind of debating whether or not to make this hardware news or nano news, but you tell me. Chemists and engineers at Harvard University have made a robust circuits from minuscule nanowires, so there's nano in there, that align themselves on a chip of glass during low temperature fabrication. The crude, creating rudimentary electronic devices that offer solid performance without high temperature production or high price silicone. So we got wires and glass. Now, how cyberpunk is this? The researchers, led by chemist Charles M. Lieber and engineer of Donahue Ham, produce circuits at low temperature by running nanowire-laced solution over a glass substrate, followed by regular oh, here we go, photolithography to etch in the pattern of a circuit. Their merging of low-temperature fabrication and nanowires in high-performance electronic device is described this week in the Journal of Nature. By using common, lightweight, low-cost materials such as glass or even plastic as substances, these nanowire circuits could make computing devices ubiquitous, allowing for powerful electronics to permeate all aspects of living, says Lieber. The Mark Hyman Jr. Professor of Chemistry at Harvard's Faculty of Arts and Sciences. So, you know, the guy's a junior professor, but it looks like he knows his shit. Because of the techniques can create high-quality circuits at low temperatures, it could be the technology that finally decouples the quality of electronics from single-crystal silicone wacos, which are resilient during high-temperature fabrication but are also very expensive. Lieber, Ham, and colleagues use their technique to produce nanowire-based logical inverters and ring oscillators, which are inverters in series. The ring oscillators, which are critical for virtually all digital electronics. Now, I'm not up on my electronics, but apparently these ring oscillator devices, which are critical for virtually all digital electronics, I'd like to check some of that, make sure it's true, okay, perform considerably better than comparable ring oscillators produced at low temperatures using organic semiconductors and achieve roughly, here's the big number here. So using the nanowires versus the standard organic semiconductors, they have 20 times faster speed, okay? That's, you know, a 2,000% increase in your speed. Wow. Think of the applications for that. Now, today's daily hack, which I'm going to give you, is a really neat site. Now, this one here is kind of a catalog site. It looks a little corporate, and they do sell stuff. But this is the kind of site that you want to be checking out. This is a really interesting site. It's called Meta Efficient. It was sent to me by No Delete. Very, very cool. And what this is a site that talks about essentially all the same stuff that we do in patrolling. It's kind of a walk site. It takes bleeding edge tech, minimalist design, all that good hacker, good cyberspace stuff, and applies it to modern everyday living and lets you know what products are out there. It's kind of like Popular Mechanics and Popular Science, where you know the hot new gadgets and all that stuff. Only it's stuff for everyday life, not stuff that, you know, is just, you know, we got a new camera. We got a new pair of running shoes with a computer in them, which is the dumbest goddamn thing I've ever heard, by the way. You hear about that? Adidas has got those new shoes with a computer in them. Whatever the hell that means. It's like we're supposed to buy these shoes because they have a computer in them and that's the only thing that's out there. Like, what the hell can it possibly do? Oh, it adjusts the torsion. Do I really need that? No. No, I don't need that. I sure don't need to pay $400 for a pair of shoes. Yet, they're only available in like one store in Vancouver. And they sold out in like 3 hours. As people are dumb, they will buy anything. It just totally pisses me off. Yeah, people are so sick that way. But getting back to this MetaEfficient, clearly, more effective products and techniques exist out there, but they're sometimes difficult to find. So who has time to track all this down? This guide aims to bring you that information to you to help make information decisions in your daily life. So far, sounds good. Mind you, it is all PR. Reactual, which is the organization, is an organization of specialists and enthusiasts who are devoted to researching the most effective ways of producing the necessities of life. We provide a guide for effective heating, cooling, electricity, drinking water production, and other essential topics. Aha, the wokeness is revealed. We look across cultures to see what people have done throughout history to fulfill their basic needs. Some of our recommendations will seem radical, but are usually based on time-tested techniques that have simply been forgotten or overlooked. Lots of cool stuff on this site. Not everyone has time to implement these kinds of techniques all at once, but almost all of us shop on a weekly basis for basic necessities. We present a purchasing guide for the most effective products currently available. Again, function over form. We try to find alternatives that are comparable in price to conventional products. We believe consumers can make major impacts on manufacturers just by opting for products that are heavier, that are healthier and more effective. And I might also add, have a longer longevity. I'm not a big fan for disposable culture. And you don't hear the term disposable culture anymore, but back in the 80s they were talking about the disposable culture, and that's how everything is. Nothing lasts anymore. We just throw it away and buy a new one. Well, I don't want to buy a new one. I don't want to spend any more money. I just want to buy it once and that'll be it. Maybe I should go into electronics making, you know, permanent electronics or something like that so that you buy a new one because the old one doesn't work as well as you want to do, but it still bloody well works. But that's all I got for you today. Don't worry. I will be back tomorrow to make sure that you get all the information you need to stay alive. But this was a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of those WOGs who are willing to fight in the war against the core political tyranny. Those wogs were Forlead, Druid Y, Simaru, Tara, David, Jesse, The Grey Ghost, Drake, Triad, Philip, Robert, Mainframe, Russell, Michael, Andrew, and User, Christopher, Derek, Jesse, Joseph, Eric, Desert Runner, Steve, Matt, Steve, Brandon, Jesse, Peter, Keith, Peter, Timor, Malcolm, Rosalie, Sergeant Tibbs, Evan, Matt, Austin, David, Adam, Host Mojo, Jonathan, Richard, Brandon, Mark, Jonathan, Philip, Jason, Art, Matt, Duel, Michael, Charles, Lars, Eric, Dark Nature, Brandon. Thank you so much. Actually, I didn't like the way I said those last three. Matthew, Lars, Eric, Dark Nature, and Brandon. Thank you so much, all you guys. And everyone, give a big welcome to our new sole supporter this last month, which was Charles. Thanks, Chuck. You the man. If you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab, because really every little bit does help to keep this news flow going. And let's not forget our army of the 12 monkeys, the flying monkeys, the hard net runners who bring this to you. Though they are Psy, Falweir, Wyondi, Mookie, Deadcode, Beefcake, Scarred, One, Visage, Forleet, Plasmonic Grid, Drake, The Boon, Bonsai Poppy, and Ion. Thank you so much, guys, for all your input and your help in getting the show on the air. Digital Baptisms. I got a letter here. Check this out. Hey, Sean. So here's the deal. A couple of friends and I are in a rock band together. Aha, it's come time. It has come to the point where we're naming our band now. Right now, we have a crappy name, and I was just wondering if you make suggestions for what we should be called. If you want some background on what we play, it's a combination of punk, jazz, rock. Wow, that's pretty diverse. Thanks a bunch, Wog. Okay, I'm going to throw out some names here, kicking around, so you tell me what you like. I'll give you a bunch of names, because a band is hard. Okay, we got Biblioside, which is a good one, Fireside Cabal, Crimson Smears, Bloody Handprint, Broken Mirror, Ruptured Capillaries, 7 Days, Muddy Boots, Choke the Screaming, Falling Words, Mirrored Eyes, or Kill Stick. Take your pick from those. Those are pretty good names, I figure. And a big shouts out to Mr. Poopy Pants out there for his helping with some names as well. Upcoming events. Don't forget about Phoenix Fest, and Burning Man is coming along too. And special thanks to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel. That's newsreal at rantradio.com. And if you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Wolfshine, Pop Killer. Now, I'm going to leave you with a song that's going to be a little bit different for the end of one of these shows, but it's a very important song to me. And it was this particular song that made me drop my job, sell everything I own, and fly to Paris on a whim, if you can believe that. This was the song that I had running in my head. This was the thing that got me off my ass and made me live my life. And if you listen to the words, it's kind of a neat song. It's a good Canadian tune by the Barra McNeils, singing the Ballad of Lucy Jordan. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.
The morning sun touched lightly on the eyes of Lucy Jordan. In a white suburban bedroom, in a white suburban town, as she lay beneath the covers, dreaming of a thousand lovers, till the world turned to orange and the room went spinning round. At the age of 37, she'd realized she'd never ride through Paris in a sports car with the warm wind in her hair. So she let the phone keep ringing and sat there softly singing little nursery rhymes she'd memorized in her daddy's easy chair. Her husband, he's off to work, and the kids were off to school, and there were oh so many ways for her to spend a day. She could clean the house for hours, or rearrange the flowers, or run naked through the shady streets, screaming all the way. eyes of Lucy Jordan on the rooftop where she climbed when the laughter grew too loud. Then she bowed.